Hello, and welcome to the Thursday, April 20th edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from Alaska's capital city, specifically the KTLO studios. Jeff Brown, the producer, put a great show together. We have history, we have arts and letters, we have animals, and we have arts and culture in the capital city. You want to find out more? Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Nebraska Liquor Control Commission voted to halt controversial beer sales in the tiny town of White Clay. Jim Kent reports the unanimous decision denies the town's four stores their liquor licenses because of pervasive alcohol-related law enforcement problems.
White Clay, Nebraska has 14 residents. It's been the center of controversy for decades due to the millions of cans of beer its four liquor stores sell each year. Most of the customers for those stores come from the nearby Pine Ridge Reservation, where alcohol is banned and alcoholism rates are high. Holbert Roop is executive director of the Nebraska Liquor Control Commission. He says the primary reason for not renewing the licenses was lack of law enforcement.
One of the conditions is that there's adequate law enforcement to ensure compliance with the Liquor Control Act. The evidence that came forth, pass out people urinating and defecating in public, fights, violence, possible rapes. We also heard from the sheriff's office. Sheridan County is a large county. It's bigger than some eastern states. It only has 5 law enforcement officers. And because of the adequate law enforcement, it appears that the public health, safety, and welfare has been endangered.
Roop notes that if the conditions in White Clay aren't an example of inadequate law enforcement, he doesn't know what is. Roop says the stores can appeal the commission's decision, or they can remain open but not sell alcohol. A judge could also issue a stay on the commission's decision or direct the commission to renew the liquor licenses. Liquor licenses for the White Clay stores expire on April 30th. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Oglala Sioux Tribal President Scott Weston tells the Omaha World Herald the commission's action is a historic decision and is the first step in the direction toward rebuilding his tribal nation. The lawyer for the beer stores tells the paper he is already working on an appeal. Stores are typically allowed to stay open while the appeal process plays out. The last appeal of the commission's decision took more than a year and a half and ultimately resulted in the state Supreme Court overturning the commission's ruling. Navajo Nation leaders are asking for the removal of the Tribal Housing Authority's top management. The Navajo Times reports the Navajo Nation president and council speaker signed a letter to Housing Authority board members this week. They say the people have a complete lack of confidence in the board, and they hope to get the organization back on track. They cite a failure to provide housing for tribal members in a timely manner and years of criticism from the federal government. The paper reports the letter also complains of a reckless display of appropriations, referring to numerous board meetings and trips the letter says are excessive. San Diego State University student leaders voted Wednesday to keep the Aztecs team name and mascot. It's a setback for those pushing to change the name because they say it's culturally insensitive to indigenous people from Mexico. San Diego State American Indian Studies lecturer Ozzy Maj helped draft the resolution the university council voted on. It would have phased out the Aztec name and imagery. He says the university has tried and failed over the years to make the mascot more culturally appropriate.
I mean, this is a university, and we're supposed to be talking about histories, and we're supposed to be talking about truth. We're not supposed to perpetuate ignorance, let alone, slap lipstick on a pig and say, there you go, it's honorific, right?
Monge says even if the student leaders approved the resolution, changing the mascot faced an uphill battle to get ultimate approval from the university administration. An American rock band is changing its name because of criticism that is derogatory to Inuit people. Gabrielle Smith, the lead singer for the band formerly known as Eskimo, issued a statement this week saying she never set out to make the band controversial, hurt people's feelings, or bring up any kind of hardship. The band's original name is spelled with an E-A-U-X on the end instead of the conventional spelling. Throat singer Tanya Tagak, who is Inuit, prominently called the band name out, saying it plays into appropriation of indigenous language and culture. The band's new name is simply O. For National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 6 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We're a live show coming at you from the KTOO studios in downtown Juno. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Partis, your Thursday host. And your weather right now, it says scattered rain showers, highs around 50 tonight. More scattered rain showers, low in the mid-30s, and tomorrow more of the same. We're looking at scattered rain showers until Saturday, where it says it's sunny, high around 50. Right now, 47 at the airport, 48 downtown, 47 in the valley, and 48 in Douglas. Nice little pairing right there. So I promised you history, arts and letters, animals, and arts and culture. So our first guests, they're in the studio with us right now, here for the history portion. So over in Douglas, we've got history throughout Juno, but we've got some major history happening right now, celebrating, commemorating what happened on Douglas and one of the iconic features of living in the capital city. So in the studios with us right now, we have Paulette Simpson and Joyce Vick. They're from the Treadwell Society and the Douglas Advisory Board. And then we also have author Sheila Kelly here, who's written a book about Treadwell Gold. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So can we start at the beginning and talk about the Treadwell Society? What is it?
Well, the Treadwell Society was formed in 2008 to basically keep alive the history of the Treadwell Mine and do that through interpreting the site, which is about a 15-acre historical park in South Douglas. If you go to Sandy Beach and you see the log shelter and then the stamp mill and you keep walking, you will be on the historic trail. And over the past 9 years, we've put up some wonderful interpretive signs to tell the story of the Treadwell Mine, which was in operation from 1882 until 1922. We're commemorating the cave-in weekend, April 21 and 22 of 1917, and that was when the three of the four mines flooded. The fourth mine, the Ready Bullion, continued until 1922. But the Treadwell Society is basically around to keep the history alive, do school tours, and also to restore what's left. We restored the pump house roof a few years ago, and now we're working on the office building preservation.
I just saw that yesterday. That's great. So all of us have been to Sandy Beach. I don't want to say all of us, but most Junoites have been to Sandy Beach. And all those remains were just part of the experience. And I think the new signage is great myself, that you actually realize that, a lot has happened everywhere you go. But specifically, this was one of the building blocks of Juno. So can we talk a little bit about the Treadwell Mine in its heyday? What were they mining for? How many people did they employ? How big was it on the scheme of the American landscape?
Go for it. Yeah. Well, it was the first major development in Alaska. It started 1882. It really opened up Alaska to trade and tourism. It mined hard rock gold. So this was after the before and after the Klondike gold rush, and which Treadwell people refer to as the flash in the pan, Klondike was. Treadwell stayed around for many years and really was responsible for a great deal more wealth. And, yes, and a company town grew up around the mine, so there were 2,000 people living there and working in the mines, and the families were there. There was a attractive, comfortable company town. That's how I got interested in it. My father was born and raised in Treadwell. And when I heard the stories about this town that had a kind of a country club, and they had all kinds of dances and sports and a swimming pool and a tennis court and all a gracious kind of living. And I got fascinated with the plus being the largest gold mining operation in the world. And the reason it was that is because of the stamp mills, which you can still see the remains of when you're there, because at one time there were 960 of those stamps pounding ore. And so it was world famous for its size and the many inventive technologies that they refined there.
Wow. So that is Sheila Kelly. She is the author of An Alaska Saga of Riches and Ruin, Treadwell Gold. It's published by the University of Alaska Press. And as she said, her father and her grandfather
were... My grandfather worked in the machine shop. He was a machinist. My father and my two aunts were born there.
Okay. So here I am, a Junoite for something like 18 years, and in Alaska standards, that's a flash in the pan in itself. But swimming pool, country club,
yeah.
Where were these places?
They were there. In fact, another interesting thing about Treadwell is all of this, the town and where the people lived, was on top of the mines. So that's kind of the good news and bad news when the mine caved in 1917. So it was all on top of it. So there was a gymnasium, a natatorium with a swimming pool, and houses, very comfortable, steam-heated houses, 2, 3, 4-bedroom houses, all painted red with green trim. So they were, and they, say tennis courts. So the amenities that were offered for all of the workers made it also unique, and tourists came here to see Treadwell, and they came because of the sort of unique and intriguing idea of gold mining and this unique company town that was world famous.
Wow, and that was way before the bridge. That was
there was actually a little, the Juneau Ferry and Navigation Company ran 4 small ferries that would go back and forth between Juneau, Thane, Treadwell, and Douglas, back and forth, starting at 6 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night, taking people. And it was actually the Treadwell mine that's responsible for all of the shipping companies and the steamship companies to actually establish regular schedules. So up until that time, you didn't have the Alaska Steamship Company, the Canadian Pacific Steamship Company. It was the Treadwell that really got them going because of all the freight that had to come in and the people and the movement back and forth.
Wow, it sounds fascinating. So to commemorate this 100-year, the cave-in, not a celebration, a commemoration of the cave-in and the changing of the Treadwell forever, obviously. One mine was still running, but most of it shut down. What's going on?
Oh, there's a lot of things going on this week.
Grab your pen and paper.
Yes. Get your pen and paper, that's for sure. It's actually going on from April 20th all the way to the 4th of July. There's a lot of things going on. The 4th of July, of course, being the parade and everything that goes along with the parade in Douglas. But starting tonight, we have a presentation at the Juneau Douglas City Museum. Tomorrow, there is at 5:30, there is a meeting at the site. And then, of course, Saturday, Paula, you might want to talk about the ball going on Saturday night.
We're doing a miner's ball in the Treadwell Room, of course, at the Flannoff Hotel, and that will be from 7 to 11. It will not be anywhere near as extravagant as the traditional firemen's balls and the Valentine dance and Robbie Burns night, everything that they did at Treadwell, but it will be great music and good food, and all are welcome on Saturday night.
That sounds great. So who's playing?
Susu and the Prophets.
Ooh, okay. 7 to 9. And how much are the tickets?
$50.
Okay.
At the door or on our website.
All right. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah. Speaking
of
pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. That sounds very enticing. So 7 to 9 on Saturday. And you mentioned the website. 7 to 11, sorry. Mm-hmm. And definitely to 11. It's a dance party with Susu and the Prophets. So your website URL, and do you have other?
TreadwellSociety.com.
Okay, great. And that's only until Saturday.
That's Saturday. And then on Sunday, we're having a potluck at Sandy Beach from 2 until 5. There will be walking tours of the Treadwell Mine. So if you're this piques your interest, this would be a great time to show up and go on the tours. There's, as you said earlier, there's so many things to see.
There are.
Great.
And the fire department will be serving hot dogs, and we have a couple of great big cool cakes with our Treadwell Tea logos on them. So it's a potluck, but we have hot dogs and cake, too.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Okay. And then another event that we have going on later on in May, May 27th, there is the ribbon cutting for the new docks at the Mike Pusage Douglas Boat Harbor. You know, they did all that work at the boat harbor, and a couple years ago the city renamed it in honor of Mike Pusage, so that would be a fun thing to do. And then on Saturday and Sunday, June 18th, 17th, and 18th, it's, of course, Gold Rush, and that's always a lot of fun in Douglas. We always get a big crowd, and everybody, there's always a lot to see and lots of challenging games to play, so I would encourage everybody to come out.
That sounds great. And this presentation tonight at the Juneau City, the Juneau Douglas City Museum, what's the presentation?
What that is, Wayne Jensen has a really great PowerPoint on the history of the Treadwell Mine, and he and I often present it, and Sheila's going to help us out tonight, too. And so it will basically be we go through 60 slides pretty quickly, and you get a pretty good flavor of exactly what the Treadwell Mine was all about. And we'll focus a little more on the cave-in than we normally do. And that's from 7 to 8 tonight at the City Museum.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to give away the presentation, but can someone talk a little bit about the cave-in? We keep on referring to it. Can we get like a little topical overview of what it was?
Of the cave-in?
Yes.
Yes. Well, for many years leading up to 1917 at Treadwell, they knew something was going on. There were underground subsidence. There would be collapsing of these pillars in the mines. And so they knew something was going on, and there was concern about it. And what finally happened is, strangely enough, people think the cave-in and flood was like a tsunami. It wasn't. A huge, like a sinkhole opened up, that which is the site of the cave-in that you could visit now. And water came up from the Gastineau Channel and was pouring into this. So the water came up over the beach and went into the mine, and a combination of the water volume and the air in there being put under pressure, it just destroyed all the things that collapsed, and you had miles and miles of tunnels that were now filled with seawater. And three of the four mines of the complex were shut down. I mean, the next day, nothing happened. Now, strangely enough, there was only one person unaccounted for. So it was quite wonderful that all the miners got out of the mine. So the evacuation notice went out early enough, and they got all the miners out from underground. So it's like there wasn't loss of life. There was one person that was unaccounted for, but all the machinery, there were the horses and the mules, the animals were lost, and the next day the town pretty much emptied out, and miners came over to this side to work in the Juneau mines, and a lot of the mine off people went off to work in war related businesses, because the U.S. had just entered the First World War. So it was overnight, Treadwell, which was this incredible example of a vibrant company town, a world-renowned gold mining center, became, you know, started on its way down to being a ghost town.
And it's said that back in 1910 or so, when our wharf at Treadwell. There were four wharves, actually. Each of the mines had a wharf, but the main wharf was at Treadwell. And we had the, at that time, it was the busiest port in all of Alaska. And reading newspapers of the time, it said that every schoolboy could talk about the Treadwell mine. Everyone knew about it because it had housed so many stamps under one roof. It had the largest hoist. It had Alaska's first swimming pool. There were so many firsts and so many greatests associated with it. So after the cave-in, in the days following, the cave-in at the Treadwell mine was front page news in newspapers across the country. It was a really, really, really big deal. And as Sheila said, many went across the channel to work in the Juneau mines. Some found work at other Treadwell companies. The foundry and the machine shop stayed open for a while. But by the end of the week, it's estimated that some 500 men were getting on the steamships heading south to find other work.
Wow. Wow, what a vibrant piece of history. Thank you so much. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Treadwell Society and the activities surrounding the commemoration of the 100-year anniversary of the cave-in. Sheila, you have something to say?
Yes, I'd like to add one, something that's coming up this summer. There's been such wonderful investment in preserving so much about Treadwell and Perseverance Theater this year. Around the 4th of July, we'll be presenting a play that is an adaptation of the book, and it will focus on the cave-in. So from June 23rd to July 4th, closing on July 4th, there will be 10 performances at Perseverance Theater on Treadwell Gold and focusing on the cave-in.
Oh, wow. How fabulous. Well, thank you all for keeping this history alive and sharing it with the people who not only live in the area but beyond. And you can check out everything at the Treadwell Society website. The book Treadwell Gold, it looks fantastic. It's published by the University of Alaska, and it looks really great. And you can pick up the book or go see the play or both.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
We bought Alaska in 1867. Seward's Folly became a piece of heaven. The claim on Douglas Island went to Treadwell in 81. The first part of this story had begun. The town of Treadwell was a sight to see. Steamships brought tourists for a fee. Polished dance hall floors, pool and basketball. The clubhouse had fun for them all. The super's house was grand. They even had a band. Treadwell really had the upper hand. Treadwell has its place in his story. Thousands enjoyed the golden time. The town had 40 years of glory. Then high tides flooded the mine. The Klondike was a flash in the pan. But the company town of Treadwell made a stand. The miner dug so deep. Beneath the city streets, the pillars in the shafts began to creak. In 1917, the tides came rushing in. Treadwell's glory came to an end. Treadwell has its place in his story. Thousands enjoyed the golden time. Town had 40 years of glory. Then high tides flooded the mine. 1926 was the key. The fire took Treadwell to its knees. People can still see the ruins of the mine. If only we could turn back the time. Treadwell has its place in history. Thousands enjoyed the golden time. The town had 4 years of glory. The fire was the end of the line. Treadwell had run out of time.
It's 25 minutes past the hour on April 20th. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We're coming at you live from Alaska's capital city. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. So that was our history lesson, which is fascinating. So check it out, all these activities going on about our own history. It's just kind of amazing. All of us go out there, we take our dogs, we take our kids, and I think the new signage is great, and so much has happened, in all of Alaska, but specifically at that Douglas site, which is great. So now we're going to move into our arts and letter portion of the program. We've got Jonas Lamb. He's an assistant professor of library and information science at the UAS, University of Alaska Southeast, our local college out the way, which we're very grateful for. And he's here to talk about an event tomorrow night. Hey, Jonas, how you doing?
Pretty good, Joan. Thanks for having me.
Well, anytime. So what's going on tomorrow night?
So we are having the UAS Authors Reception. It's the second annual event, and this event is put on by a fledgling network that we have called the Friends of the Egan Library. We're a network of the UAS Alumni and Friends Association. I'm one of the inaugural members.
Yay.
And so this is an annual event that is going to go on, and it will showcase the scholarly and creative publication work of UAS faculty members in the previous year. So this year we're recognizing 17 UAS faculty that have published, and we will have drinks, appetizers. There will be a recognition of Ernestine Hayes for her Alaska Writer Laureateship. And there's also going to be some sort of wacky prizes. We're going to try to have it be fun for our faculty members. They're, you know, spend too much time writing this sometimes stuffy scholarship. We're going to, like, shake things up a little bit.
Oh, man, I have questions for you, Jonas. Okay. So, all right, first of all, I'm a friend of the Egan Library. I think it's a beautiful building and a great asset to the city of Juneau and Douglas. So, yay, if you want to become a friend of the Egan Library, check it out with the Alumni Association.
Sure, or you can visit the Egan Library website, which is uas.alaska.edu/library, and there's a give page, and there you can find out about becoming a member of the Friends of the Egan Library or find other avenues for making donations to the university.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah. Not only its collection and its beautiful building, but all the activities that take place there.
Sure, yeah. So we're a great event based on the community, and part of this event, we're hoping to sort of draw more interest to get our faculty involved in sharing their research and their creative work in something called ScholarWorks, which is our institutional repository. Most universities have this. It's just an online way that you can showcase work in an open access format. So a lot of times these faculty publish work in journals, and then due to budget cuts and other circumstances, maybe the students and the university or the library can't afford a subscription to that journal, and we can't get access to that that research. So by faculty putting their work into the institutional repository, they can share that access with anybody and share their research.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
So 17 faculty members were published in the last calendar year. And how many faculty members do you have?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me that question, and I have no idea.
It seems like a high number for a small college. It seems really fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, faculty are active at UAS. In addition to their teaching load, you know, they're involved in mentoring undergraduates in research. I know last year one of the authors that we featured, there was a math professor and then one of his students. So this was an opportunity for us to recognize a student author at this event. I know that a lot of students are involved in this type of research. So, and it's part of the faculty That's your work.
Yeah, that's
you're,
part of
you're
the university
teaching,
process.
You're teaching, you're publishing, you're contributing to your field, and it's an exciting opportunity. We have a lot of students that are super engaged in undergraduate research, so we'd like to extend an invitation to those students to come and see their mentors get recognized by the chancellor. We'll make remarks, and everyone will have an opportunity to learn a little bit more about the Friends of the Egan Library and ScholarWorks and mingle.
All right. Yeah. Well, I can't let you go without two more questions.
Sure.
One is the names. Give us the names.
Okay. I can at least read names. This is a lot of names. As long as you don't...
It's 17 names.
Yeah. So we're going to be recognizing Jason Amundsen, Brian Buma, Michael Boyer, Jason Fellman, Leslie Gordon, Ernestine Hayes, Erica Hill, Aaron Hood, Kevin Meyer, Saul Neely, Heidi Pearson, Jan Straley, Lance Twitchell, Laura Vess, Emily Wall, Robin Walls, and Jennifer Ward.
Yay, congratulations to all of you. That is wonderful. And so that's Scholastic Journals and creative work and all different types
of
things.
Yeah, from anthropology, work on the burial rituals of the Mok people from northern Peru, to Tlingit language learning handbook. There's transboundary river hydrology. There's an Alaska Native memoir. And there's some poems by Emily Wall.
Right, yeah. Right. And then Ernestine Hayes, who's a professor at the university, she's been honored this year.
Sure, yeah. So she'll be serving as the Alaska Writer Laureate for the next 2 years. She has been recognized sort of formally at the Governor's Art Awards for the Arts, but this is sort of an opportunity for the university community to acknowledge this honor and celebrate with her.
Congratulate one of their own.
Yeah, I've been fortunate to have some conversations with her about some ideas she has for her laureate project, and I hope she'll have an opportunity to share a little bit of that with the guests tomorrow.
Okay, yeah. And then last but not least, wacky prizes. Come on, just give us a little... prizes.
Sure. So I think occasionally you'll hear of the Brevity Award, perhaps for the person that, you know, can be the briefest or present an idea very succinctly. Well, we're going to give the opposite of that award for the research article or the publication with the longest title. we have several other golden awards that will be presented to folks for various publication and other commitments and service that they've made to the university. So.
Okay, so if you want to join the fun, that's tomorrow night at the Egan Library, put on by the Friends of the Egan Library, part of the Alumni Association, 5:30 tomorrow night out the road at the University of Alaska Southeast.
Yeah, and give yourself a little bit of extra time if you're heading out there. They're straightening the curve, and there's a little bit of construction out there at Auk Bay.
Must be spring in Juneau.
It is.
Well, thanks, Jonas, for coming in and all you do for our community.
Thanks, Jonas.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 20th of April, 2017. It was on this day, 1841, the story The Murders in the Rue Morgue by Edgar Allan Poe was published in Graham's Magazine, considered now the first detective story ever published. He created the first fictional detective, C. Auguste Dupin, and the story introduced many of the elements of mysteries still popular today: the genius detective, the not-so-smart sidekick, the plodding policeman, and the use of the red herring to lead the reader off the track. It's the birthday of one of the founders of psychiatry, Philippe Pinel, born in Saint-André, France, 1745. He was the chief physician at an insane asylum in Paris in 1792, and when he arrived there, conditions were horrible, patients chained to the walls. People could pay a fee to come in and look at the crazy people. Pinel put a stop to all of that, and also the treatments such as bleeding and purging. He argued that the insane were not possessed by demons, they were just under a lot of stress, and he started treating people by talking to them about their problems. It's the birthday of the Spanish painter Juan Miró, born in Barcelona, 1893. Considered a surrealist, though he himself rejected identification with any particular artistic movement. Juan Miró, who said, "The painting rises from the brush strokes as a poem rises from the words, the meaning comes later." He said, "For me, an object is something living. This cigarette or this box of matches contains a secret life much more intense than that of certain human beings." It's the anniversary of the Ludlow Massacre in 1914, Ludlow, Colorado, when the National Guard opened fire on a group of striking coal miners who were working for a mine owned by the Rockefeller family, which was paying the National Guard's wages. The miners, 8,000 of them, were protesting low pay, terrible working conditions, corrupt management, towns completely controlled by the mining company. 13 were shot and killed trying to escape. Dozens of people died in days of rioting that followed. A group of 11 children, 2 women, burned to death in one of the mining pits. Wallace Stegner called it one of the bleakest and blackest episodes of American labor history. Here's a poem for today by Lowell Yeager, "Praise Be." Praise be to the not nearly a girl anymore clerking at our local grocery outlet since junior high, single mom, moved up after a decade of customer service to manage 4 well-ordered aisles of hairsprays, lipsticks, and youthful glow and glittering squeeze tubes, familiar, red-headed, brown-eyed, gap-toothed smile, willing to put aside her boxes of chores to chat with each of us she names by heart. I forget if she's Mary or Alice or Jane. "Fine," I answer after she asks, "How's your day?" And driving my sacks of next week's meals home, I wonder why she rises from her labors to greet me, why she straightens her smock where it's pulled up a bit and rides her hips, tucks in place a loose wisp of curl. When I walk by, what does she want to know when she asks, "How's your day?" I wonder why so seldom I've asked it back. A poem by Lowell Yeager, "Praise Be," from his collection "Or Maybe I Drift Off Alone," published by Shabda Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Healthy Smiles are here. On May 15th, Search will open the doors to its updated and expanded Children's Dental Clinic. Staffed by board-certified pediatric dentists and outfitted with the latest in pediatric dental technology, the new clinic will provide your child with a lifetime of healthy smiles. All kids' smiles welcome, from the first tooth to 17 years old. Call 789-KIDS to make an appointment for your child today. This message brought to you by Search.
It is 18 minutes to the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. And as I promised, next on the show is, let's talk about animals. We have the Run for Fun race, Wag Your Tail, Hit the Trail, 1 mile walk, 5K run for the Gastineau Humane Society. And joining Jeff and I in the studios, we have Matt Musselwhite and Kerry Howard to give us the scoop.
Hi, thanks for having us today.
Yes, appreciate it.
All right, so it's Saturday. And where is it?
This Saturday, April 22nd, we're holding the event at the Forest Service Mendenhall Lake Campground, which is really great this time of year because they don't open officially until May 1st. So the gate is shut and the whole road system in there is available for walking and running, and it just
perfectly aligns to be a 1 mile route and a 5K route.
Wow, you guys are trailblazers. Why didn't anybody think of that before? 5K run, that's great. Or maybe they have and I haven't heard for it. So it costs $20 for 18 and over, $5 for ages 6 to 18. Registration at 10:15, 11 a.m. start. And I would imagine this is family friendly, including the four-legged kind.
You bet. As long as dogs are on a leash, because we welcome dogs, but just to make sure the dogs don't get too excited.
Yes, it's Gastonia Humane Society. Keep your dogs on a leash. And it would be really good if they were licensed as well.
Oh, yes.
As they're supposed to be.
Exactly. And then afterwards, you've got a little treat for the adults and the two-legged.
Yes, humans, 21 or over, free beer. Provided by Alaskan Brewing.
That's very nice of them.
It's wonderful of them. They've been big supporters of us for years, and we sure appreciate it.
Okay, and so if people want to find out more, where can they go?
Well, you can visit the Humane Society, of course, on Glacier Highway, or our website, ghspets.org. Or you could just show up for pre-registration at 10:15 on Saturday at the Mendenhall Campground.
Okay, and we do have a great embellishment, a free prize drawing. If you register, your name goes in a hat, and our prizes include everything from a 5-glacier flight seeing tour and dinner at Taku Lodge for two, to a beautiful waterproof hiking backpack from Foggy Mountain, to a bag of running goodies from Nugget Alaska Outfitter, hats, T-shirts, and that's all for free. So we really want people to encourage people to come and have fun. And the weather forecast is for sun.
Sunny,
good weather.
Around 50.
We'll take it.
Exactly. And all proceeds go to Gastineau Humane Society.
Helping animals in need.
There you go. Well, thank you for all that you do for our families and our four-legged members and other than four-legged members.
Yes, there are birds.
There's birds and probably slithering things.
We help people, too. We're not just there for the animals.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks you.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
The Alaska State Improv Festival returns to McPheeters Hall in the Hangar Ballroom, April 27 to May 1, with groups from across the continent featuring Listen Fams from San Francisco. Shows begin at 6:30 each night. The Alaska State Improv Festival, April 27 to May 1, McPheeters Hall and the Hangar Ballroom. Visit asifest.com for more details. Alaska State Improv Festival, April 27 to May 1, asifest.com.
This year's Empty Bowls event, the annual fundraiser for Juneau's Glory Hole Emergency Shelter, Soup Kitchen, and Care Center, will be held on Sunday, April 23rd, 5 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Empty Bowls truly is a community fundraiser with local artisans providing guests with beautifully handcrafted bowls and local restaurants generously donating all of the food. Join us for an evening of delicious soups, live music, a silent auction, and more. Tickets at Hearthside Books locations downtown and in the valley. Details at feedjuneau.org.
Hello, welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. Our next guest is back to the arts and letters and arts and culture portion of the show. We've got Andy Hirsch from the Juneau Public Libraries, and she is here to talk about, I believe, the second annual Comic-Con, which is like a big and great deal for Juneau.
So it is so cool. So thank you so much for having me on. So if you haven't heard yet, this weekend is Comic-Con. And so the kickoff is actually Friday night at the Valley Library, starts at 6 o'clock. And so what Comic-Con is, or Mini-Con, Alaska Robotics Mini Convention, is there's a whole lot of guest artists in town. And so this includes illustrators and authors and musicians. There are people like Raina Telgemeier. She wrote Smile and Sisters, which are books we cannot keep on the shelf at the library.
Tell your children about
right. They're very, very good. They're amazing. And, you know, Kazu Kibuichi, he wrote the Amulet series, beautiful artwork. And so he's in town, as well as a whole host of other artists. And so there's an opportunity, there's a lot of opportunities to meet them and talk with them and hear what they have to say and watch them do art. And so that's a little bit about what Comic-Con is. Also, it's just a excitement about comics and being kind of nerdy, dressing up, having costumes. Mine is really great.
Ooh.
So, anyway, so there's a lot of different events going on this weekend. And so it kicks off on Friday, April 21st, 6 p.m. at the Mendenhall Valley Library. And what we're doing is I think setup starts at 5, there'll be snacks and mingling, and then at 6 o'clock, every artist that's in town is going to do a 5-minute presentation of whatever they want. Some people read stories, some people show their art, a couple people draw live, it's got musical accompaniment in it, and it's very funny, and it's a lot of fun. So everybody should head out to the Valley Library tomorrow at 6, and then go to Egan afterwards. your two library tour for staff. So it is going to be...
The librarians hang together.
It's
tight.
True. Yeah. It's true.
And then what happens on Saturday, the main event
right.
at
so
the Jack?
There is a big event at the Jack, and that runs from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and there's tons of booths. So the Juneau Public Library has a booth, so you can check out comic books from us. Bring your library card, or if you don't have one, we can make one for you. And all of the different artists and illustrators and people will just have booths, and you can talk to them, and you can buy their work, and there'll be demonstrations throughout the day, both at the Jack and at other locations through town. And I don't know all of them because there are a lot. I just kind of know the library ones, so I'm going to talk about that.
There you go.
And if you want the full lineup, go to the website.
Exactly.
Look up Juneau MiniCon, Comic-Con.
Alaska Robotics.
You'll get all the information.
So at the library, we're doing a couple different things. We're doing special story times, and they start at 12:30, and they go all the way to 2:30. And every 15 minutes, a guest artist is going to come and read stories. So people who are coming, like Vera Broxall is coming at 12:30. She wrote Anya's Ghost, which is a fantastic ghost story. Everyone should read it. And then she's followed immediately by Kate Beaton, who you may have heard of. She does online comics, including Hark of Vagrant. So if you ever wanted, like, historical in-jokes, like, this is your person. and so there's tons of different authors and illustrators and people who are going to come. We actually have 8 different people lined up. So you can drop in for one, stay for all of them, and have stories read to you, and it's super fun. After that, at 3 o'clock, we're actually hosting Georgina Haynes, who is the creative supervisor and puppet fabricator for Laika Animation Studios. Laika did Coraline the movie and Kubo and the Two Strings, which was out recently, Paranorman. And so all of that animation and that stop motion animation is built on puppetry. So she is going to come and talk about stop motion and building puppets and how all of this works, how you do special effects, and it's going to be really nice. And so that is at 3 o'clock at the downtown library. And she is not to be missed. She is fantastic.
Wow. I can't believe how many fantastic people are converging on Juneau.
I know.
And then, you know, when Andy's talking about comics, we're not talking about Archie here. You know,
we are talking about Archie, but a lot of other comics, too.
Okay, I stand corrected. We are talking about Archie, but we're also talking about the modern-day comic, which is also known as a graphic novel.
Correct. Well, yes and no. So there's some debate about that. But a lot of times a graphic novel is one story told sequentially. So it's like a book, whereas the beginning and the end are really different. A comic is generally in terms of what you would see in the Sunday newspaper, where each strip kind of stands on its own, and it might have little arcs, but it's not one large story. So
cool.
Both terms are appropriate and just kind of refer to different things.
Interesting. I think that's fascinating the way you describe that. So this is...
Everything is free also. And that's kind of thanks to the Friends of the Juneau Public Library. They participated, and Alaska Robotics and a lot of other things going on. But the Friends of the Juneau Public Library provided the funding to rent the Jack, for instance. And so that means you can get in for free. Another free thing you can do is the Gold Town Theater will be showing stop motion films along with Georgina Haynes' talk. So you can see Jason and the Argonauts Saturday, April 22nd at 1 or 6 o'clock, or The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad at 4:30 or 8. So you can learn about stop motion, go see stop motion, meet people, look at puppets, touch the things, It'll be really cool.
It sounds great.
It is so exciting.
So to find out more, go online to Minicon, search it out, Minicon Juno, and it should be really fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming in and
talking about it. Thank you for having me.
And I'm sure you could check things out at the Juno Public Library site as well.
Yes, it's also on our website.
Sounds like they are
and
an
our
essential
Facebook page.
Part of this as well.
Why, thank you. There's a lot of different partners who work to make this happen, but mostly... You know, Pat Race at Alaska Robotics. We couldn't do it without him.
Special shout out because in this genre, this is a top notch. Like, this is it. These are the real deal.
These are New York Times best-selling authors who are showing up.
You said it a lot better than I. So listen to Andy. So there you go. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
All right, thank you.
This is Bird Note. It's been raining hard for hours, but at last, the mid-April sky begins to clear. We can almost see the Gulf of Mexico from where we're standing, a quarter mile from the Texas coast, at the edge of a stand of oak trees. The rain has finally stopped, but now something else descends from the sky. Birds. Hundreds, thousands of birds. Rose-breasted grosbeaks, orchard orioles, painted buntings, warblers, flock after flock, they alight in trees and shrubs, sparkling indigo buntings perch alongside velvety scarlet tanagers. We are experiencing what birders call a fallout, one of the great spectacles of bird migration. The legions of birds dropping from the sky have flown nonstop across the Gulf, covering 600 miles in about 15 hours. Exhausted and hungry from bucking the storm, they land at last in tree-filled sanctuaries near the town of High Island, Texas. The birds will refuel and then fly north to breeding grounds across the continent. Isn't it lucky for the birds that people have conserved habitat for these famished and weary travelers? For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. We're in our arts and culture section. Our final guest is in the studio with Jeff and I. It's Nancy DeCharney, who walked across the beautiful street today.
It's a beautiful spring day.
Exactly. It's not quite raining, and it's not quite sunny, but we'll take it.
That's
it. So, Nancy, what is cooking?
Well, we do have one of those busy weeks, weekends.
Okay.
Yeah, so I decided to color coordinate it. Now, you can't see this, but I can.
Okay.
So
if
you're
organized. It's organized. Nancy, type A is showing.
So if you're looking for live music this week.
Lovely.
Yeah, so let's just say that it's Friday night or Thursday. As a matter of fact, tonight, you're thinking, I'd like to go someplace and hear live music. It's Louis for you. At 6 p.m., they're doing Val Snyder with her band Sugar Shack is there. On Friday night, we've got Ed Littlefield with Christian Fabian and Ruel Lubog out at the UAS. And later that night, Dirty Skis, who's a band from Sitka, coming out at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, they're talking to Andy tomorrow.
Okay, at the Alaskan. And then other live music that we have, Ed's performing at the Walter Soboloff Building. This is free and open to the public, and that's on Saturday at 6 p.m. So, you
also have Susu and the Prophets at the Miners Ball, Treadwell Society, live music.
Okay, so I put that under dancing.
Oh, I'm sorry. We don't like that one. Sorry.
That's all right. So let's just say instead that you're just looking for some theater. We have a lot of theater to choose from. Sorry that you missed To Kill a Mockingbird if you did, but that's all right.
I didn't.
See that? We've got Shakespeare's Cymbeline at McFeeters Hall. The Thursday night performance, which is tonight's, also includes dessert, and it's a fundraiser for McFeeters Hall.
And I'm going tomorrow.
You can do fundraising and seeing theater. So Cymbeline is this weekend, 7 p.m. at McFeeters Hall, and it's running, I think, all the way through to Saturday. Then we also have Disney's Beauty and the Beast, which is the Thunder Mountain High School and Music Drama or Music Department. They are on Friday and Saturday. All of these things have matinees as well. And Beauty and the Beast goes on to Sunday with a matinee. So those are your theater things, if you feel theater-y like. If you're feeling danceable, we were just saying about the dancing. It's the ballroom dance, Spring Fling. They're going to be having a fusion partner dance with Patrick Courtnage. He's a wonderful dancer. Anyway, that's at 7 p.m. at the Jack on Friday night. And as you mentioned, there's the Treadwell Miners Ball at the Baranoff, and Susu and the Prophets are performing. So that's on Saturday at 7 p.m., goes till 11, and it's a fundraiser. So we're doing all sorts of things with that. We have, let's just attack some other things. If you're feeling like you want to do books or readings or history or those sorts of things, there is the Treadwell history. Is this a whole celebration of the Treadwell history?
They were just in. So it's really amazing how many activities are happening to commemorate the 100-year anniversary of the cave-in.
So we've got that tonight at 7, but also at 6:30 there is the third Thursday out at Hearthside Books in the Mall out the valley with Bjorn Deal. He has wrote a Supernatural Legends and Unsolved Mysteries book.
Exactly. Haunted Passages.
Yes. Friday at noon, Ed Littlefield's doing a lecture about Tlingit music, past, present, and future, how traditional knowledge was shared in the past and how we incorporate those styles of learning in our everyday lives. And Woosh Canadier on Friday is at 6:30 over at Perseverance Theater. It's they're celebrating National Poetry Month, so come on over for that. Let's see. We just get carried away here, don't we? I think we've covered everything that's happening on Thursday and pretty much everything that's happening on Friday.
And so then Comic-Con.
Let's just look at Saturday, which gets pretty wild. We have Audubon Spring Bird Walk. It's 8 in the morning, 8 to 10. Go out to Point Louisa off rec. Do that. There's a March for Science from 9 to 10, Alaska State Capitol, a rally starting at the Capitol, cheering positive science messages. As you mentioned, Comic-Con, we're all looking forward to that. There is at Twin Lakes, and I'm going to see what time that is, 10 o'clock, Healthy Kids, Healthy Planet, at 10, also, and that's at Twin Lakes. At the high school, there is Renewable Juno Fair on Earth Day.
Oh, cool.
So it must be Earth Day. And at 10:30, there's a Humane Society Run for Fun.
Run for Fun.
That's out at the Mendenhall Campground. It's a one-mile walk or a 5K run. It's a fundraiser for your pups, I suppose. And there is a meet and greet for home protection over at the Prospector Hotel, little ring doorbell things. That's at 11. We have on Saturday, the Kindness and Couture Fashion Show.
Oh, right.
That's happening at the Elizabeth Pradovich Hall. There's a bunch of family promise sorts of things, homes for homeless people. The real big thing that I am concerned about, that you all need to know about, is Gitxon Native Dancers on Sunday at 7 p.m. This is an amazing dance group, and they are coming to Juneau, and then their next stop's Italy.
Oh,
I mean, you know, like, don't miss that.
Where are they playing?
They're being at JDHS. You can get tickets at the Jack or at Hearthside Books or online. But this is definitely an opportunity that's very rare, and we're lucky to have them, and we're looking forward to it. So I hope we see you there.
Great.
Don't forget Pillars of American Freedom on Wednesday.
All right.
Anything else? We done?
We are.
Okay.
We've run out of time. There's so much to do. You have to go to the calendars. You have to go to the KTOO calendar or the JAHC.org calendar.
Yeah. But pick something. It'll be fun.
It will. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming by, and thank you all for sharing your day with Jeff Brown and myself. Jeff is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. Andy will be hosting tomorrow, and it's always a party with Andy Klein. He'll be talking about March for Science. Highlight the Juno Ventures, Saturday's Kindness and Couture fundraiser, a little details about that. It sounds great. And talking with the Dirty Skies band that will be playing at the Alaskan this weekend. Right now, it's 47 degrees. We're looking at scattered showers for the next couple of days and sunny, highs around 50 on Saturday. Thanks for joining us.